Welcome to Worlds Apart. Apart from the many security and political disagreements between Russia and the West that precipitated the current conflict in Ukraine, the two sides also differ on existential concepts such as justice and equality and the ways they should be codified and implemented within the international system. Can a lasting peace be achieved without addressing those fundamental issues first? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by John Dugger, the professor of international law, who used to serve on the United Nations International Law Commission. Professor Dugger, it's a great honor, great pleasure for me to talk to you. Thank you very much for being available.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here this afternoon.
Now, it's been about 7 or 8 years since decision makers in the United States started publicly referring to the rules-based order as opposed to international law. And before we discuss the change of meaning and emphasis hiding behind this rhetorical device, I want to ask you when you first encountered this very interesting phrase and what impression it made on you at that time.
I must confess that it only struck me forcefully under the Biden administration, because although the term has been used before, you've mentioned 7 years, and I think that's probably the time that it started, but it's become very prevalent under the Biden administration, where both President Biden and his Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, and other officials in the administration refer to the rules-based order or the rules-based international order rather than international law.
Now, as you pointed out in your very detailed and recent articles, this shift to the rules-based order can be seen as the U.S.'s alternative to international law and something that Washington and its allies can use to mean whatever they want it to mean. It's a very pliable concept, and I think one can argue that it's not just in the eyes, but also in the hands of the beholder. And this is what I want to ask you about. Do you see it as just a rhetorical device, or do you see it as a means to, you know, very concrete policy or policy change for that matter?
Frankly, it is a mystery to me. I don't really understand it, because no attempt has been made by the Biden administration or any serious politician to explain exactly what it means. And it has been used differently by different politicians. For instance, just 2 or 3 days ago, I heard Justin Trudeau in a debate about the recent dispute with India referred to the fact that he was complying with the rules-based order. I was surprised to hear Justin Trudeau use that term. Other Western leaders have used that term, but I don't think they use it with the same conviction and consistency as the members of the American administration. I think the British are perhaps more prone to using that term as the United States does, but it's quite clear that many Western European leaders use the term very loosely. For instance, the Dutch Prime Minister spoke about the rules-based international legal order, which is really a synonym for international law itself.
What seems manipulative to me is that there is an appearance of a codified norm that intends to put certain constraints on the others without restricting the party that wields it, in this particular case, the United States. And what I'm genuinely wondering about is why Washington would need something like this, because the United States has a lot of influence on how international law is shaped, how it's applied. Why would it need an alternative?
Well, I think there are a number of reasons why Washington might prefer to use the term rules-based international order rather than international law. In my recent article, I suggested three reasons. The first is that the United States is not a party to a number of significant, important treaties, Take, for instance, the Law of the Sea Convention. The United States is not a party to this convention. And so for this reason, one finds that it criticizes China for its actions in the South China Sea by referring to the fact that China has violated the international rules-based order rather than international law. But there are a host of other treaties, particularly in the field of international humanitarian law or international human rights law, to which the United States is not a party. Say, for instance, the 1977 protocols to the Geneva Conventions on the Law of War. The United States is not a party to that. It's not a party to the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court. It is not a party to the Anti-Personnel Mines Convention or to the Cluster Bombs.
But Professor Dugard, it's not a party to those conventions for many decades, and never before it was particularly constrained or ashamed of it. I mean, the American officials simply stated that they disagree with those conventions, and that's why they don't want to be a party, a full party to it. But this phrase only appeared fairly recently.
Yes, well, I think it has become very important now because the United States is calling upon states to comply with certain provisions of treaties to which it is not a party. So this is very clear in respect of the Law of the Sea Convention. But let me just mention another problem, and that is that the United States has recently decided to provide Ukraine with cluster bombs. This is very difficult to reconcile with the commitment of other members of the Western Alliance to prohibit the use of cluster munitions. Most Western states are party to the convention prohibiting cluster munitions. And I find it very difficult to understand how they could accept the decision of the United States. So this is an example of the type of difficulty that the United States gets into when it is not a party to any convention. Take another example, perhaps a more obvious example. The United States is very opposed to the International Criminal Court. You will recall that it imposed sanctions on the former prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, Fatou Bensouda, largely because she was pursuing an investigation into the conduct of U.S. military in Afghanistan. She was subjected to travel restrictions and a freeze on her assets. The United States is not a party to this convention, and so it's made it very clear. But now that prosecutor of the ICC has decided to indict President Putin, it becomes very embarrassing for the United States. Now it has to throw its full support behind the ICC while distancing itself from the ICC at the same time.
Well, the United States seems to be, as it has long done, claiming a certain special status for itself. And in fact, in your article, you quote your colleague, Professor Stefan Tellman, saying that the rules-based order seems to allow for special rules in special cases. And I wonder if we can go further than that to say that it's intended specifically to sanctify the American position on any case as special. The United States is ultimately claiming to be above the law, above international law. Or is it too much? Am I taking it too far?
Maybe that's putting it too high, but I think the example that I gave of the attitude of the United States towards Israel illustrates my point, or illustrates Stefan Tellman's argument that the United States has special rules for friends. In the case of Israel, for instance, the United States refuses to accept the illegality of the annexation of East Jerusalem. It is moving its embassy to Jerusalem. It also seems to accept the lawfulness of the de facto annexation of the West Bank. So it's really opposed to unlawful annexations in respect of the Crimea or Donetsk or Luhansk. But when it comes to Israel, different rules apply.
I've heard you say before that we may have to accept that double standards and hypocrisy are features of foreign policy of many states. And I want to ask you just why we have to accept that, because it's not only unethical or immoral, but it's highly dangerous because it almost inevitably creates imbalances and impunity within the international system and undermines the very premise of law of, you know, keeping everybody, you know, encouraging everybody to comply with the same rules. So if we accept hypocrisy as an inherent feature, then aren't we doing away with the whole concept of law?
Yes, well, the double standard is fairly common in international relations, but it is unfortunate, and one must do all one can to oppose it. And of course, it does become easier to engage in double standards if you are not behaving in accordance with international law, but in accordance with a strange institution called the rules-based order, which is not international law, and quite frankly, I don't know what it is.
Now, Professor De Groot, we have to take a very short break right now, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned. Welcome back to World Apart with John Dugard, a professor of international law who used to serve on the United Nations International Law Commission. Now, Professor Dugard, you pointed out in your article that this new phrase, a rules-based order, the use of it is quite selective, and it's primarily used to criticize Russia, increasingly so China. You mentioned the example of Canada and India, which I think is a very interesting new addition. Why do you think it is those particular countries that have become the targets of RBO criticism?
My difficulty is I don't really know what the rules-based order is intended to be. And I think most European leaders do not either. They use the term very loosely, sometimes as a synonym for international law. Sometimes they use the term rules-based order. So I don't know what the purpose of the rules-based order is, but certainly it alienates the rest of the world. And it's not only China, the Russian Federation, and India that have difficulties with it. I think that the Global South is also concerned about the failure of the Western powers, and the United States in particular, to play by the rules of international law. And I think this may be one of the reasons why the United States is not able to gather as much support as it would like for the sanctions against Russia in respect of Ukraine. Because the Global South really has been informed, told over the years that it must comply with international law, as it is generally understood, the Charter of the United Nations. And now we find that the President of the United States and the Secretary of State say that they're being governed by some strange creature which is not international law.
Mm-hmm. But Professor Dugard, I wonder if the reason for many countries in the global south resenting the use of that concept is simply because, whether we like it or not, international law provides certain security and peace guarantees. It comes with an inbuilt benefit of predictability. If you play by the rules, you can expect that others play by the rules with regard to you. And I wonder if there is a sort of a hidden advantage to the United States coming up with this new rhetorical or policy device in that the West will encapsulate itself within its own imagined rules-based order, while other countries will be left to their own devices and allowed to follow international law. When in fact, I mean, if we see at some of the recent developments between, let's say, Saudi Arabia and Iran and China and India and some other countries, many countries do actually want that predictability that international law provides, even though it's sometimes difficult to comply with it on a concrete basis.
Yes, one can't have too much flexibility in the application of law. International law, as I understand it, is a universal legal order which governs all states. The rules are clear. We know who makes the rules, and we know how disputes relating to the rules can be settled by international tribunals or the International Court of Justice. But now we're in a situation where we are to be governed by some amorphous system where the rules are unknown. That's one of the difficulties that I have. I do not know what the rules of the rules-based international order are. And I don't know who makes the rules. Clearly, the rules are not made by the International Law Commission or the Sixth Committee of the General Assembly. I get the impression that the rules are those rules that suit the United States and possibly its Western allies. But I think it's more the a legal system, or not a legal system, a system of rules that is devised by the United States to suit it at any given moment. And that is what alienates the Global South and other states. It might be argued that there's some sort of tacit agreement amongst Western powers as to what the rules of the rules-based order are, but they haven't been spelled out at all. So it's very difficult for states to know what is expected of them.
Absolutely. And I have one possible explanation for the designs behind this phrase, and I want to run it by you, because it is Russia and China that are the most frequent veto users at the UN Security Council against the West's proposed initiatives. So I wonder if this quasi-legal, well, it's actually not a legal concept at all, if this was invented in a way to perhaps undermine or delegitimize the Security Council, where the United States and its Western partners are still seen, at least officially, as on par with others, rather than, exceptional in some sense.
Well, I'm not sure that the purpose of the rules-based order is to determine the behavior of the Security Council, because the United States and Russia do both have the veto. So I wouldn't say that's the reason for the rules-based order. I don't think the United States has paid much attention to it. I have a feeling that President Biden just has an aversion to international law because the rules are strict and they remove the flexibility that the United States would like in respect of its international relations and in its exceptionalism in respect of its friends.
Now, let's come closely to a very sensitive subject for me and my country, that is the war in Ukraine. And I know that you are of the opinion that Russia has violated the most fundamental principles of international law by launching its military operation in the neighboring country. And yet the American condemnations of those actions for now revolve around the rules-based order, which, as we discussed, is a much narrower concept and also much less legitimate concept. It's not widely accepted by the international community. Why do you think Washington is rooting its blame of Russia within the RBO confines rather than using the advantage, the propaganda advantage of international law?
Well, this is quite frankly something I don't understand at all, because the traditional way to approach Russia's actions in Ukraine is to argue that the United Nations Charter prohibits the use of force against the territorial integrity or political independence of another state, and the only escape from that prohibition is self-defense. Russia has argued self-defense, but quite frankly, not very convincingly. But I would have thought that was a much better framework in which to approach the whole matter. But instead of that, well, I might just mention before that the European Union has condemned Russia in terms of international law. So it's the United States, the Biden administration, that prefers to condemn it in terms of the rules-based international order, which is meaningless as far as I'm concerned.
Now, I've been covering Vladimir Putin's policies for two decades, and I also went to the same school where he got his legal diploma, and I know for a fact that legal issues are not fully foreign to his heart. I mean, he takes legal reasoning pretty seriously, but he also made a number of statements to the effect that law is a law only when it's upheld universally. When it's one-sided, when it's exploited by a stronger party, it stops being a law and it becomes either, you know, a political tool or a weapon, you know, something that allows one party an advantage over others. And I wonder if you see any real-life reasoning there. I mean, it's true that Russia violated Ukraine's territorial integrity, but did it have any other legal means of addressing its very grave security concerns?
Well, I suppose one could say that this was a matter which should have been referred to the International Court of Justice, but Russia is not. Russia does appear before the International Court of Justice, but I doubt whether it would refer this particular dispute to the International Court of Justice in order to settle the matter. Other means which might have been followed, such as negotiation. But I don't want to enter into the whole history of the dispute over Ukraine. Let me say quite frankly, when I was much younger, I fell under the influence of a great Russian or great American international relations expert, George Kennan. And George Kennan warned very strongly that it was in the best interest of the West not to extend NATO to Ukraine. And I think that was sound advice.
Well, George Kennan was writing and thinking at the time when international relations were far more straightforward and there wasn't too big of a room for ambiguity, which I think the United States has been using and abusing in recent decades, not only with the rules-based order, because it's a very ambiguous concept. You know, it assigns responsibilities to some and impunity to others, but also in many other policies. And this, I think you have also argued that this, in fact, undermines international law, which has to be interpreted in a more or less uniform way for it to be respected, for it to be upheld. And I want to ask you, as somebody who's dedicated his career to legal matters, do you think it's possible still for the international system, for the international community to come back to the sort of authenticity of purpose when it comes to international law, the agreement that, you know, we all will comply by these rules that we have agreed upon, and we will not come up with all the, you know, all those special cases for special countries?
Well, quite frankly, I'm very distressed about the present state of international law, because there are so many special cases. I've been very deeply involved in the case of Israel-Palestine for many years. And this is a case in which the West, and the United States in particular, are guilty of terrible double standards, and they refuse to apply international law. The law is very clear. Palestine invokes international law in order to achieve the abolition of the occupation and the independence of Palestine, but the West simply refuses to apply international law as it applies it in respect of other states. And that's what I find so interesting about the present situation in Ukraine, that the principles of international law that are invoked by the United States and the West against Russia's intervention in Ukraine are precisely the same issues that appear in the Israel-Palestine conflict. You have annexation, unlawful annexation, occupation, brutal occupation. But the West applies completely different standards. And this is really what troubles me about the state of international law.
Well, I want to sound a little bit more optimistic, because in this part of the world, in Asia, we have a proliferation of all sorts of very loose consensus-based non-binding formats, like, for example, Shanghai Cooperation Organization, BRICS, where decisions are made on a consensual basis, but they are actually upheld by various countries because they see the benefit in sticking to their word. And I hope that this trend will gather up steam, but it is indeed premised on the all sides treating each other as equal parties, being on the same level, rather than somebody having some special status over the other. Do you think there's anything hopeful in the emergence of all those consensual formats of negotiations?
You use the term consensual, which I think is the key word. International law is premised on the consent of states, either the tacit consent of states in international customary law, or the expressed consent in the form of treaties, bilateral or multilateral. And this is my objection to the rules-based international order. States have not consented to it. And one can't have a legal order or some sort of international order, the rules-based order, to which states have not consented. And that is really the root of the whole problem. And I think that we have to get back to very basic principles in respect of international law, and that is that international law is based on consent.
And it applies to everybody who consents to it.
Exactly, and equality too, the equal rights of states.
Okay, well, Professor de Groot, we have to leave it there. It's been a great honor for me to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. It's been interesting sharing ideas with you.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.